Searching the Scriptures with Watchman Alexander, Episode 42.
Is everybody in the world going to die before someone finds the answer?
Do I have to remind you that theory is the beginning of solution?
What are we up against? Is it a dangerous thing?
All I've ever known to be true is a lie.
I didn't say it would be easy. I just said it would be the truth.
I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Welcome to Searching the Scriptures with Watchman Alexander, where we break away from religious systems and man-made dogma to learn the Word of God from an independent Hebraic perspective. And now your host, the prophecy buff who tackles the tough stuff, Alexander Lawrence.
Hello and shalom. This is Watchman Alexander.
And this is Terry Arnold.
Hope everybody's doing well today, whatever day it is then you listen to this. What a great thing podcasting is, where people can just listen whenever and wherever. I hope you're taking us with you on some of your errands, you know, doing some good multitasking. That's what I like to do. I like to listen to podcasts while I'm, I was going to say working out, but I haven't done working out in a long time. So I used to do that. But when I'm doing chores and taking care of the baby and he's playing by himself, that sort of thing. But we are really glad that you're with us. And we want to continue on in Genesis chapter 9 today, taking a look at what's happening with Noah's family after the flood. But before we get into that, I want to let you know that my wife and I have just joined forces with a couple of other families to start a home fellowship in the Central Texas area. Specifically, it's out in Taylor right now. Eventually, we're hoping to move that closer to the interstate, to I-35, hopefully somewhere in Georgetown or Round Rock. But right now, we're in Taylor. And this is a very informal thing right now, but we have felt the Lord leading us to institute a worship gathering on Shabbat, since we're not part of one in our area right now and haven't been for a couple of years. We've been doing the Sunday morning church thing, but we do believe that the commandment is still applicable, that we are to have a holy convocation or a holy gathering the seventh day. And so it's small right now. It's only a few families plus a few other guests, but I mean, our doors are wide open. So if anybody lives in the Central Texas area, close enough that you are willing to make the drive to Taylor, and you're interested in joining us, reach out. My email address is admin@watchmanalexander.com. And just make sure you put in the subject line something about the Sabbath fellowship. That way I'll know it's high urgency and I'll take a look at that. I have to say, I'm sorry for all the people who have emailed me over the past several months and I haven't replied to you yet. It's just the craziness of life. I'm way behind on emails, but if you send me something about the Shabbat fellowship, I will know that I need to open that up urgently, and I'll get to that. But yeah, you are all welcome. I just want to hear from you through email or through Facebook Messenger or something first before you come visit. That way I can know who's coming and we can give you some guidelines, a little bit of a rundown before you get there. But please consider joining us if you're within driving distance. That being said, let's get into Genesis chapter 9. And Terry, if you would do the honors.
Yes, sir. Let's see how far we want to read down here. I think I'll read, we'll see how far we get.
Okay.
Then God blessed Noah and his sons, saying to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth. The fear and dread of you will fall on all the beasts of the earth and on all the birds in the sky, on every creature that moves along the ground, and on all the fish in the sea. They are given into your hands. Everything that lives and moves about will be food for you, just as I gave you the green plants. I now give you everything. But you must not eat meat that has its lifeblood still in it. And for your lifeblood, I will surely demand an accounting. I will demand an accounting from every animal and from each human being too. I will demand an accounting for the life of another human being. Whoever sheds human blood, by humans shall their blood be shed. For in the image of God has God made mankind." All right, we'll go ahead and pause right there then on verse 6.
Okay, thank you. So we know the story. God tells Noah, be fruitful, replenish the earth. Nobody is in it anymore except Noah's family. So they got to refill the face of the earth. And we who are speaking today all come from Noah and his family. So we really are one big human family. And that's always important to keep in mind. But the thing I want to zero in on here first, well, two things related to eating. Number one is we're not supposed to eat blood. Nobody descended from Noah is supposed to eat blood. And this is reiterated in the book of Acts at the Jerusalem Council in Acts 15. One of the things that the Hebrew believers there in Jerusalem decide upon to tell the Gentile believers, the Gentiles who are becoming believers, the new converts, they decide that they need to instruct them to refrain from blood. Now, there's a whole bunch of stuff that new believers need to learn, but there were four very important things that the council decided people needed to learn right off the bat. And one of those things is don't eat blood. So this is a big deal. And it's a thing that somehow some believers have forgotten. I just want all the Christians and Messianics and, you know, any type of believer out there to realize that we're not supposed to be eating blood in any form. So if it's put into any kind of a dish, which sometimes is done in novelty places or at fancy restaurants, you should avoid those things. And certainly don't take part in any kind of ceremony where there's blood drinking, which is done and still done today in certain parts of the world. So be careful about that. The life is in the blood. We're not supposed to be drinking that. And then the other thing is the dietary commandments are adjusted here. It seems that before this point, and it's hard to really prove this based purely on Genesis, but it seems that before this point, the righteous lineage of mankind was not eating meat, that they were all vegetarians. And that at this point, meat eating became more of a necessity because of the change in the environment and because of the lack of crops and enough fruit on trees and that sort of thing. It would become more difficult to only have a vegetable diet at this point. So God gives permission to eat these creatures. Now, a lot of English translations will say every moving thing that lives will be food for you. But this is a very difficult thing to interpret as far as I understand, because the Hebrew word that's used here at the beginning of verse 3 is a little bit vague. And I believe that word is remez. It's Strong's H7431. Remez, is that the correct way to say that?
Sounds like the word for creeper that we talked about a couple episodes ago. Double checking now.
Okay. Yeah, the Strong's definition is a reptile or any other rapidly moving animal that creepeth, creeping or moving thing. But that is a very strange definition and very broad, and it doesn't exactly seem to fit the context of this verse. Certainly, God's not telling Noah and his family that they are to eat only creeping things like reptiles. That doesn't mesh at all with what we know about God's dietary plan for humankind as it's unfolded later on in the books of Moses. So why is this word in here? Is it the proper word? Are we interpreting it correctly? I don't know. But it gives me pause, because if God were saying you can eat anything and everything, that seems to be out of sync with the fact that there are already declared unclean and clean animals, and that later on, he tells his people, don't eat the unclean animals. Let's wrestle with this for a minute.
So this is really interesting. I hadn't thought about this on this verse 3, as far as in the Hebrew. Even though I've read that verse in Hebrew, it didn't click the way you were just talking about it. So, you know, when we zoom back out and we talk a little bit about Acts 15 again, the whole issue was, do the Gentiles have to follow all of the law of Moses? And the kind of subtitle there was right away, right? In order to be saved, they gotta do all that the law of Moses says, including the dietary laws, which we're now talking about, right? Mm-hmm. And when we look at this here, when he says all really that everything that creeps is like a subset of the list that started in verse 1, really verse two. The fear and dread of you will be on all of the beasts of the earth, right? The birds of the sky, the creature that moves along the ground, the fish in the sea, they're going to be given into your hands. Everything that lives and moves about will be food for you, or everything that's a creeper will be food for you. Just like I gave you the green plants, right? Which that points backwards to when he allowed us to eat fruit and vegetables before, right? I give you everything now. So since that's a part of the subset of the list, is saying, hey, all of this is fair game for the earth as a whole. And that is intended, right? When we talk about, you talked about the righteous seed and what the righteous people will eat and do and whatnot. What was also said in Acts 15 was that it was implied that by going to Shabbat and continuing fellowship, that each individual person would move at their own speed to learn and begin to take part in the rest of the things that Moses taught, right? You know, because underneath all of this is our understanding is that Moses brought this particular account to us to begin with, right? So it's one part of Moses, but he's sharing the part that has the grander scale around. So there. It seems to be both things at play here, that yes, the clean, unclean animal is already at play, and it's understood that the clean animals are the ones that are sacrificable. I'm just making that word, making that word up. Oh, yeah. And so they're sacrificable. So that part is clear already. As far as them only being fit for eating for the righteous, right? That part is not clear yet. Here in this passage. And so I think that if we understand it as a whole, that it's still including everybody, and it really is saying everything for being edible. But he is also talking, well, I guess in verse one, he says specifically he's talking to Noah and his sons, right? And so you got all of the nations of the earth that are going to come from these guys. So Shem is in the crowd, right? when God is speaking here. And so that's where that righteous seed is going to come from, and where the stricter laws and whatnot about what should be eaten will come from.
What confuses me, though, is the category of animals covered by remez doesn't seem to fit the broader category of animals that we know are okay to eat. So like fish and birds, there are types of fish and types of birds that are perfectly okay to eat. In fact, we saw Yeshua himself eating fish. Those things are fine, and yet they're not categorized as creeping things or things that move along the earth. Oh, yeah. So do you have any idea as to why there's a disconnect there?
So, I mean, what you're saying is interesting, because that the list I'm saying, oh, it's a part of the list that started in verse two. But you're right that the breaking of the verse into two and three kind of does make some kind of distinction. And we might want to also take a look at Acts 10 while we're here. Before we get to Acts 15, where they're having the bigger discussion, okay, how to, like, what do Gentiles have to do as a baseline? We get to Peter's vision, right? And in the vision, we should see the similar categories grouped here. So,
yeah, why not? Let's turn this show into a discussion about dietary laws. Let's go for it.
Might as well. Acts 10, verse 11 is the spot. Now, Peter's like up. He's having a vision on top of his roof where he's staying because he got hungry. Anybody else ever have a trance while they got hungry? I don't know. Verse 11 of chapter 10 in Acts. He saw heaven opened, and something like a large sheet being let down to earth by its four corners. It contained all kinds of four-footed animals, as well as reptiles and birds, right? Then a voice told him, "Get up, Peter, kill and eat." "Surely not, Lord," Peter replied. "I have never eaten anything," and don't miss that there's two words here, "impure or unclean." The voice spoke to him a second time. "Do not call anything impure that God has made clean." This happened three times, and immediately she takes back.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I just want to insert that some English translations will use the word common.
Yes.
Common or impure, either one, referencing the same Greek word. And this is something that is very frustrating about English translations. And I would imagine similar things into other languages, modern languages as well. But oftentimes, in this case, we do have the distinction in the text, in the English text, between the two types of cleanliness or two categories of food. But in a lot of places elsewhere in the New Testament, you will find the translators using the word unclean for both. So, for instance, in the book of Romans, there's a couple of places where he talks about impure or common foods, or not foods, but animals, meats, if you want to use the King James word for it. And those are translated as unclean, which is very misleading. So we have to understand that in the Greek and in the Hebrew, there were two categories. One was man-made, which I'm sure Terry's probably going to say already, but one is the impure or common category is man-made. It's not found in Torah. The other category, unclean, is found there.
Right, right. Spot on. And so, you know, when we're looking at this, what God corrects him on is specifically the man-made category, right? Mm-hmm. Verse 15, and I'm gonna pause here for a moment, make sure I pull this up right. The word that is being used there is koino. So I can't speak Greek very well or at all, really. Take that pronunciation how you will, but that word that's being used there is common. So the one that God is correcting Peter about is calling things common as though that's some kind of like bad thing in regards to that, because what had happened was that there was that man-made list that Alex already mentioned, specifically from the Pharisees and the traditions that they had, that basically rendered foods that were supposed to be okay, they rendered them inedible to people who were following parts of the oral Torah. I don't want to get into a whole oral Torah discussion here, but parts of it rendered things that were supposed to be okay in God's eyes, they rendered them inedible to the people who were putting down these rules that were man-made. So the part that God's correcting, he's saying, hey, look, don't call anything by that category because it came from me, right? That's the whole sheet coming down from heaven part. It's something that God has cleansed and he's presenting before Peter to eat. And so when we get to the later interpretation of what this passage means, this is really more so talking not so much about eating, but it's about the acceptance of Gentiles, right? And so the all kinds, the phrase all kinds of four-footed animals, as well as reptiles and birds, the way that it got interpreted by Peter and everyone there was that that is referring to the nations, to the Gentiles, to us, right? Because both Alex and I are Gentiles. So that's talking about us and our acceptance and that we can be cleansed by God himself and be fit for the kingdom, right? Because the word kosher means fit, right? But it's typically like fish, fit for eating, but here it's fit for the kingdom. And so like that's the interpretation of the whole passage by the time you get through chapter 11, and we get reminded of it in Acts chapter 15, because Peter is one of the first people to speak in the conversation about whether or not Gentiles can be saved without converting fully over to the law of Moses or any of those things, the oral Torah especially. I think they had that in the back of their minds when they were thinking about the yoke that was too heavy for them and their forefathers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all that's exactly right. The conclusion that Peter comes to after having this vision is found in Acts 10:28. And he says, you yourselves, he's talking to Gentiles here, you yourselves know how unlawful it is for a Jew to associate with or to visit anyone of any other nation. But God has shown me that I should not call any person common or unclean. So Peter interprets this correctly as not being about animals at all. And a lot of folks, a lot of theologians will point to this passage and say, here God is showing Peter that there's no more distinction between clean and unclean animals. Not so. Peter knows this is not about the animals. This is about human beings. And God was using the animals as a representation for the different types of humans. Now he says it's unlawful for a Jewish person to associate with a Gentile. but that is not found anywhere in God's law. So the law he's talking about here is Jewish law. He's not talking about God's law. He's talking about man-made law. The Jews had said, don't associate with Gentiles, but God never said that. God said, don't take part in some of the Gentile practices. He didn't say, don't associate with them. And so God had to correct this religious training in Peter. He had been brought up in a society where they said, there's these things you can't have for food because they're impure, and you have to wash your hands before you eat or you're impure, and you can't associate it with the Gentiles or you're become impure. None of that was true by God's standard. That was all the man-made religious stuff that had gotten added on. And so then he again says in verse 34, truly I understand that God shows no partiality, but in every nation, anyone who fears him and does what is right is acceptable to him. So he's again teaching us what this vision of his means, which is that God is not partial. He's not going to show favor. Whether you're Jew or Gentile doesn't matter. All that matters is your belief and your obedience. So trusting and obeying God, that is what God is looking at. The Jews are not some ultra special group of people that's better than everybody else in their own merit. God chose them for a special purpose. They're not just inherently better than any other human beings. What makes a person better is turning to God and doing what God says. That makes you better, regardless of your ethnicity. So that's what Peter was learning here. We got to deprogram what the theologians have put into our minds about this being about food. And notice one thing that's very important to point out if people want to engage you on this topic is that Peter said three times, no, he would not eat the animals that were shown to him in that vision. He never did say, oh, okay. And remember, this is long after the resurrection. So if all of the past laws had been undone, he would have known that by now. If Yeshua had wanted to do away with Torah, if he had fulfilled it in the sense of, okay, all God's laws are now done, there's a new rule book, and you don't have to worry about that stuff, Peter certainly would have known that by this point, because he spent many days with Yeshua after the resurrection, and all of that would have been made clear. So evidently that did not happen, because when Yeshua gives him this vision, he is still adamant, I do not eat that stuff. That is against the law. Now, of course, he was conflating two laws, Jewish law and God's law, but he was right that there were animals there that he could not eat by God's law. And so he adamantly said no three times. He didn't change his mind. He didn't go, oh, well, I guess God's saying this is okay now. Like, this vision must be teaching me to, you know, take up a new way of life. No, he didn't come to that conclusion. He said, I know what I know. I can't engage in the sin of eating these animals that God has already told me are not okay for human consumption. So, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to add here. So the word there, when he says, oh, you know, it's unlawful for a Jewish man, right, to go into the house of another. So that word there is not exactly unlawful. It's more like uncustomary. So the word there is athematos or athematos, right? And okay. So it's actually not the same word as lawless or unlawful.
It's not a nomos.
Right. It's not a nomos. That would be a different word. This is athematos. So it's really uncustomary for is really. So that's our hint that tells us that this is not something from the law of God. This is something that's from Jewish traditions.
Let's thank God for a moment that he is impartial and that he didn't declare certain people to be unclean, impure, you know, unable to be associated with, because that would mean a lot of us are out of luck.
Yes,
I, for one, am really glad that God's not like, you ain't from the line of Abraham. Forget it. You're not getting into the kingdom.
That sounds inherently unfair. Yes, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Hold it right there, Watchman. Get a cup of tea. It's time for Everything Under the Sun when we take 3 minutes to hear from the Watchman's wife, Amanda Lawrence.
I confess, I have a hard time with the morning quiet time. I have 24 books about Christian living. I currently have about 45 devotionals saved across 2 different apps in my phone. I have 3 additional devotional books. I have 2 different audio Bible apps. And a lot of mornings, I'm basically paralyzed with indecision about how to study the Bible. Do I Russian roulette it, turn randomly in the Bible and hope I don't end up in the prophetic books because I only have 30 minutes and I can't get that far down the rabbit hole? Do I listen to a sermon or read a book? And if so, is that an acceptable way to spend my time? Do I spend it all in prayer? Is there a right way? Do I rotate everything so that I'm basically steeping in kingdom-related everything? Songs, books, teachings, or videos? And then I feel guilty if I'm not just in the Bible. But then, when I am, do I do a word study? Focus mainly on the Torah portion and balance it out with some gospel? Proverb a day? You can see here how I struggle. I see the enemy working here, yes? I'm so focused on making sure I'm doing it the right way, I don't actually focus on God. I end up scrolling on my phone because I can't nail down what to do, which is a problem. Long story short, we had a massive hailstorm last week, and I was on the highway in my car when it hit. I was already ramped up to about a 7 from the lightning that kept striking in rapid succession and the deafening thunderclaps coming from right above me. So when the hail started hitting and cracking my windshield in dozens of places and denting every surface of my car, I started crying and screaming. I was afraid the windows would break, and then I wouldn't even have that meager protection from the near racquetball-sized hailstones. It occurred to me after that, when I was screaming, I was calling out for the watchman, not Yahweh. Now, I was also trying to call the watchman, which was unsafe, at the same time that I was trying to navigate to a parking lot that had some cover, but still, I saw the watchman as the solution and the answer to my weather predicament, not the Lord. As I'm writing this, my son is playing near me on the floor. He's playing with a big teething necklace, and he keeps getting mad and crying when he throws it across the room. So he keeps hurrying over to me so I can comfort him, and then he happily crawls away, re-energized until the next necklace hardship occurs. I want to be like that. I want to know that in times of upset, I'll reach out to the Lord instead of anyone else. I want to run to him to satisfy, comfort, and help me so that I have the strength and encouragement to keep going until the next big thing. I thought I was already there, but one severe hailstorm has turned into the opportunity to press in closer and make sure that I'm consistently going to him in some way daily. So can you all do me a favor? Can you drop me a quick note and share what you do for quiet times? I think it will help me not only to glean ideas, but to see that there's not some elusive one correct way that everyone is doing. Some seasons, I'm really great about consistently doing quiet times, and my connection and relationship with the Lord is very strong. And honestly, I've just kind of gotten away from that right now. So please help me narrow down what to do. And if you think about it, say a quick prayer that I would be able to focus on the Lord and get back into a rhythm of spending consistent time with Him. So please take the 90 seconds it'll take to send off a quick email to me at thewatchmanswife@gmail.com and let me know how you enjoy spending time with the Lord. Thank you.
Genesis 9, going back there now, just connecting, right? So here, we don't see any specific prohibition about what the sons of Shem, Ham, and Japheth and their children, which would include everybody, there's no restrictions placed here at this place on us. And so this is probably a good spot to for us to kind of close up to say, hey, there is a clean and unclean that's already been introduced. We understand at this point, clean simply means sacrificable at this point. Like if you look at all of the texts that we've dealt with from chapters 1 through 9, at this point, anything seems edible. However, there is a prefigure and a shadow here that we're already seeing go all the way to the book of Acts where we just were, and saying, hey, that's not always going to be the case. There's going to be some stuff that gets corrupted along the way, and that's we'll need to even shift to where we just eat clean things. So all of that is kind of foreshadowed here. It's not explicitly saying you only eat clean yet, but you know that it's coming. But that's a part of this covenant. And so hopefully next time we'll get to talk more, starting with the whole tenets of this covenant, which have already been started here when we talk about the prohibition against blood. But this particular covenant that God makes with Noah and his sons and all the earth, it's a big one. And typically it's called the Noahide laws or the Noahide covenant. And maybe we can dive off into that on the next show.
Absolutely. Let me finish up with just one more thought about this. I don't understand why the word remez is used in verse 3. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me in the context of all of Scripture. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense that it leaves out groups like fish and birds. But I will say that if we look in verse 6, just a few verses later, we see an instance of where we need to use a little bit of common sense and we need to use our context clues to understand what's being said. And the verse reads this way: whoever sheds human blood by a human being will his own blood be shed, for God made human beings in his image. Now, if we were to take this really literally, we would come to the conclusion that anyone who kills another human being for any reason whatsoever is going to be under judgment and will come to their own end at the hands of another man. And we know that's not true. We know that there are times when it's okay to engage in warfare. There are times when it's okay to kill in self-defense. It's not okay to be the instigator of violence, unless you're instigating violence on behalf of God to protect his honor and protect his people. So for instance, Phineas killed somebody, a man and a woman who were together, who were going to engage in sin during a time when people were being judged for that very same sin. And so in order to not only glorify God and show how important it is that we not sin against him, but also to protect all of the people who are being affected by this sin, he instigated violence. He killed this guy who was no threat to him. So there are times when, and God praises him for it. God's like, pat on the back, you did the right thing. Now the plague can stop. So there are times when it's okay to kill. And of course, there are different infractions that God assigns capital punishment as the result of that. And so we've got to use that common sense to understand that this verse 6 is not to be taken ultra literally. What it's telling us is whoever sheds man's blood unjustly, whoever commits murder, not whoever kills. So knowing that there's a little bit of logic and reason that has to go into understanding verse 6, I think we can apply the same thing to verse 3 and understanding that this category, remez, whatever it means, cannot just encompass anything and everything because it doesn't fit with what else we find in Scripture. All right, that's all our time for today. Until next time, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Watchmen out.
Shalom.